How can technology help older people's mental health during coronavirus? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, demystifying the digital economy. I'm Kimberly Adams, in for Molly Wood. People over 65 and those in nursing facilities are at much higher risk of severe illness from COVID-19, and social distancing means they can't have normal visits with family and friends. That makes mental health care really important, and facilities that usually rely on in-person counseling are shifting to remote options. But telehealth can have its own complications. I know because my sister, Dr. Nicole Adams Flores, is one of the people navigating that transition. So I brought her on to talk about it. She's a supervising psychologist for CHE Behavioral Health Services, and she works at several nursing facilities in and around New York City.
First of all, we're trying to make sure people are able to social distance from one another. So it's not always ideal for us to take someone out of their room, wheel them through hallways where there's lots of other people doing things, and into a private room. So to that end, we're bringing the telehealth platform to our patients. And that is happening via tablet or phone. What's been really nice is that the rules around telehealth have altered a little bit so that the insurance companies are supporting multiple different ways that we can connect to a person. And telehealth is gone from just kind of the computer screen and a person talking to a doctor via computer to also including a telephone call.
So what does that look like for different patients?
So for example, I am allowed to use WhatsApp, FaceTime, or any type of video platform to conduct a session. Pre-COVID, there would be a prescribed way or a prescribed platform to use, and that was the only one you'd be able to use to conduct a service. Now, they're kind of letting us do anything we can do to make sure people get the mental health services that they need in a way that's effective.
But what does that mean for patient privacy? Are these things HIPAA compliant or secure for what are very sensitive conversations?
Yeah, that's been a big topic of conversation, and I don't think people have the answers yet. I think patients are, when you go and meet with a patient, you ask their permission to use whatever platform you have to move forward with the conversation. If the patient gives their consent, we move forward at this point. But the conversations about privacy and HIPAA are an ongoing conversation that literally we're having conversations about daily in supervision and in discussion with insurance companies. These platforms aren't traditionally the way that mental health services are delivered. So and I don't believe they were created for that purpose. So to that end, now that we're using them in this way, it's almost like we're working backwards a little bit, right? We're using the platform for a different purpose other than what it was intended for. And now we're trying to make sure that those platforms will ensure patient privacy.
What about quality of care, though? Is that compromised or enhanced at all by these changes?
One of the drawbacks to a telehealth platform is there isn't the ability for human interaction in the way that you could in a counseling session. There's something to be said for just being in the presence of another person. There's definitely something different about it. It feels a little more distant, a little more cold. But when we're able to provide those in-person counseling sessions, many times now a part of that session includes being able to chat with family members. It's wonderful that we have technology to kind of introduce into those counseling sessions because many of the people in our nursing facilities whom are receiving care don't have smart technology.
So how could technology, and I'm talking about the devices and the software here, provide a better experience for this group?
So it would be nice if software companies would be thoughtful about all the types of populations that might want to use software to do a traditional job. It's just there's a learning curve that goes along with any type of new technology. And somebody that might be cognitively impaired due to a stroke or a brain injury, sometimes that technology is really hard for them to learn or begin to use in a way that's meaningful.
And of course, in this whole interaction, you're talking about people who know that they are at serious risk of illness or death from COVID-19.
Yes, which contributes to an exacerbation of mental health issues that they're already struggling with. Anxiety is through the roof. Depression is just overwhelming. And when you're not able to contact or be in touch with your family members in a way that you're used to, it really contributes to the sense of hopelessness and being overwhelmed with a sense of, am I ever going to get better? Will my life ever be the same? One of my patients is a Holocaust survivor. She's in her late 90s. And she was talking to me about how she really thought she was a resilient person, surviving the Holocaust, coming through the experience, having a family around her all the time that loves her. And now that she is isolated from them, alone in her room most of the day, for her, she really continues to, she's saying for her, it's almost like reliving wartime experience that she's feeling so isolated. She actually had her granddaughter that was visiting her from out of town, and we were able to connect via WhatsApp. And as a clinician, you feel like you become desensitized to some types of emotions. But even in this session, I found that I was tearing up and crying when she saw the way that technology could really connect her to her family in a meaningful way. Now, mind you, I was holding the phone and I had to touch all the applications to make it happen. And her hands were trembling as she was crying, blowing kisses to her granddaughter, or great-granddaughter, actually. But it was so worth it to see how it really made an impact in a positive way. So after we finished her being able to see her family, she said, "Oh, please come back next week. I have a list of people I'd like to be in touch with." So it was a really nice way that we were able to have technology in our session that really supported her feeling more connected to family.
So if you have an older friend or relative who lives alone or in an assisted living facility, maybe give them a call or perhaps try a video chat. And now for some related links. Mental Health America hosted a webinar a couple of weeks ago looking at the mental health of older Americans during the increased social isolation of the coronavirus pandemic, warning that loneliness, depression, and anxiety can contribute to a lot of other mental health problems, but also including lots of resources for how to help or get help. Links to the video and slides from that are at marketplace.org. We also have links to mental health resources from AARP and the organization Diverse Elders. There's also an automated helpline for older people and their caregivers with COVID-19 information, actually 8 helplines in different languages, including English, Spanish, Cantonese, Japanese, and Korean, and that's provided by the National Asian Pacific Center on Aging. I'm Kimberly Adams, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.